You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And again, my guest, Jerry Durant today, former colonel in the United States Marine Corps, veteran of the Vietnam War, which is something that you don't hear, combined with Iraq and Afghanistan, so that means he was around for a few years. And it's always awesome to have you on, sir. So the email goes on. Here's my question. Is Mosul having an effect on them institutionally? They see the hard fight that they're in for. They know this isn't going away soon. And in order for them to stabilize their military, they know that they've got to find a way to get better education, guys who are more familiar with our systems, more familiar with us culturally, and so that thing happens smoother because they see we are going to have a longer-term relationship. I'll quote you, Mac, am I reading too much into this? I'm hopeful, but I know how fickle they have been in the past. Sir?
No, I agree with what he's saying. The only problem is the still a very unstable country. You've got the Iraqi army is doing some of the fighting up there, mainly tank units and artillery units, infantry not that much. Counterterrorism Services, CTS, is doing most of the fighting, along with the PMU, the Popular Mobilization Units, which were the, we used to call them Shia militias. They're still Iranian-led. So, that you know, the CTS and the PMU are doing most of the fighting.
Okay, hold on. But, TMU, are those led by Iranian officers?
Yes.
So
yes.
Iranian regular soldiers, enlisted, you know, NCOs and officers are leading that.
Yes. And in fact, the campus, we were running a top-level school campus.
Yes.
There's a bunch of them staying. When they're back in Baghdad, they stay at our campus.
The Iranians do.
The Iranians do, yeah.
Holy.
We run we've got a BOQ there that they're staying at.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's what I said. We've also got Russians and Chinese there, too.
All right. Certainly interesting. Next email.
No, I agree with what he's saying. No, the problem, though, is we've got Peshmerga up north with the Turks right behind them because the Turks don't want the Peshmerga to get any of Mosul. You've got about a half of the city has been taken now, and there's still another half to go. And you've got the PMUs up there, which were they used to call them Shia militia. They're now wearing Iraqi army uniforms. And then you've got CTS fighting as well. And that fight's going to go on probably another 3 or 4 months.
I saw who's the CO there? Who's the senior officer there? Army guy. He said over the weekend,
Army.
Yeah, he said last week that he thought that both. And this is what maybe you can explain it to me. And I'm getting out of sequence here because I get excited when we talk about to people that have just been there. He said that both fights, the fight for Raqqa and the fight for Mosul, would probably be concluded in the next six months. And my thought was, Raqqa? We're not even close to Raqqa yet. But he was talking 6 months. Let me ask you about Mosul. What is the sense of Mosul as you travel around, as you hear them talking? How is it going?
It's going, but it's just going to be a hard fight. It's the second largest city in Baghdad. And when you start thinking about big cities, you can't think U.S. standards. I mean, you've been over there, but Baghdad is just a huge, sprawling mess.
Right.
And Mosul is the same way. It's just a huge, sprawling mess. I mean, we were in Fallujah. It was worse than Fallujah. Fallujah was, halfway in the streets were set up, north and south, and that kind of stuff. And Mosul, it's just, it's a mess. It's huge. And you're not getting big, you've got some big tall buildings, but not that many.
So when you say it's a mess, can you define mess for me? Here's what you see in Fallujah. You see streets. You see wiring is jury rigged above streets.
Yeah, same thing.
And you just see this mishmash of the way that they live that poses very few similarities to the way we live.
Yeah, 100% on.
In terms of organization.
When I'm talking about mess, I'm talking about the door-to-door fighting, the street-to-street, and then, you know, how do you keep clear the stuff you've got, you know, you've already gone through? How do you keep that clear behind you? It's just, I mean, a huge sprawl of humanity.
Next question.
Not easy to keep it all clear.
Mac, I'm curious, why is the Iraqi army still unable to fight? Sir?
Probably leadership. They just, you know, for a long time it was a mix of Shia and Sunni, and they've got rid of most of the Sunnis. About 2 weeks ago, they named a new MOI and MOD. MOI is a Shia. MOD is a Sunni that's in tight with the prime minister.
MOI is?
Is Minister of Interior. He's got the borders and the police.
Okay.
And MOD, of course, is Minister of Defense, is the military. But they've got a Sunni back in as Minister of Defense, you know, which that's who's had that billet for a long time.
But they're not cool with sharing power. So how does that work? Is simply a figurehead?
Well, it's working now. No, the Minister of Defense right now is in tight. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's in tight with the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister trusts him.
Wow.
And, you know, that's important. If the Prime Minister doesn't trust the guys, you know, that's what happened with the last one. He wasn't trusted because he was a Shia or a Sunni, and the Prime Minister got rid of him. And then they had an interim, you know, for quite a few months, and they just named a new guy to come out. But the Iraqi army just hadn't had the leadership there. And, you know, why should I go to a place like Al Anbar and put my life on the line for a bunch of Sunnis when I'm a Shia? And that's been part of the problem. They don't want to go fight in a place like Al Anbar province. They're fighting up in Mosul because Mosul's a mix. You got Peshmerga up there, you got Sunni, you got Shia. And one thing that really stood out, is I drove over almost all of Iraq this time. Every place you go to, every village and city, there are big posters up of martyrs that have died since ISIS started fighting in Iraq. You know, the military guys have died. There's thousands and thousands of those posters everywhere.
And those posters are put up by the government or by people?
By people. You know, their loved ones. And some are put up by the government, too. But it's pictures, you know, the dead soldiers from that province or that city or whatever.
Wow.
But they're everywhere.
Interesting.
One of the guys we work with, his nephew was killed over there up in Mosul when we were there. And it wasn't. You know, it was a sad thing, but at the same time, you know, the prevailing thought is, well, he died for his country. And if you start thinking about it, they are fighting for their country. And because if they let ISIS come into Baghdad, you know, they end up taking over the whole country. So these Shias are fighting for their life, for their families, and, for, you know, for the country.
But that's always been the issue, is that I'm not fighting for my country. I'll fight for my tribe, but I'll only fight under certain circumstances, and if I don't agree with those circumstances, then I'm out.
They're fighting for their lives now, because if ISIS is allowed to stay up there, they'll expand. Like 2 years ago, you know, they're threatening Baghdad, and Baghdad is mainly Shia. And you can see what happened, you know, with 2nd Division when they came into Mosul. You know, they captured about 400 or 500 Shia soldiers and executed every one of them.
Right.
So they are fighting for their lives, and you know, and the people know that. So you talk to I talked to a father and talked about his son being killed, and he was very proud of his son because he's fighting for his country.
And he was Sunni or Shia?
He was a Shia.
He was a Shia.
And that's who's doing most of the fighting up there. It's these PMUs or the, you know, popular mobilization units.
Another email. Mac, I'm curious, why wouldn't Sunnis want to fight for Mosul, which is in Sunni land? Yes? Question mark. Mosul in Sunni land?
Nah, it's a mix. There were a lot, it was, if you look at a map, it was up around where all there's Shias up there, there's Sunnis up there, and there's Peshmerga up there, you know, Kurds up there. And about probably 20 years ago, 25 years ago, Saddam was was forcing Sunnis to move up north. So you've got a population up there. It's got Sunnis and it's got Shias in it. And it's got oil. So, you know, they don't want to give any of that stuff up.
The, All right. But I agree with kind of that has been Mosul, Tikrit, that area, historically Sunni. Why would the Iraqi army not be able to fight? Another question for you. Hey, Mac, first of all, thanks for having Colonel Durant on. Always great to hear him with his experience around Iraq and also what he's done since then. My question is this. What is the future of the Iraqi army? It is hard for me to believe we've been working with them since 2003, and they are still on their ass, unable to fight for their own country. And you see the Peshmerga, the Iraqi special forces, and you see the Iranian-led militias leading the way, and the Iraqi army still incapable of defending its country and supporting its armed forces peers. Where is it going, and how does it get better, sir?
Well, personal opinion, if you're going to be involved in a fight like that or into a third world country like that, you know, one reason the counterterrorism service is doing so well is when Obama pulled all of our troops out of Iraq, special forces, you know, from this country and other countries stayed with the counterterrorism service, and they're 100% professional military organization. And we pulled all of our advisors out from the Iraqi army. You know, if you're going to make a professional army like that, you have to have advisors with them. And you know, we pulled all the advisors out, and they went downhill after that. I think if you're going to do that, you're going to have to put the advisors in. They have to stay in, just like we did with the counterterrorism service.
Interesting.
You know, the Brits did the same thing in the Pacific when they were in, not Indonesia, but on Jakarta and all that,
right.
You know, it was a 30-year fight over there with them. They kept advisors there for 30 years. And if we're going to help the Iraqis, we're going to have to do the same thing. You're going to have people down to the battalion level working with the Iraqi army.
And is that the lens that we're going to have to flip to, is that, look, this is going to be a long, slow transformation for them, and we have to be patient, and there will be times when we have to step back and allow them to sort it out, and then we'll have to reengage once they do.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, the counterterrorism service, I've been doing some work with them, and you know, they've got advisors there, and they're day on, stay on, and you know, they listen to their advisors. Now, I said it's a 100% professional organization. They are not part of the Iraqi army. They report directly to the prime minister. You know, they've got their own budget now. It's a separate organization within Iraq.
Wow.
And it's a pleasure working with those guys.
Another question for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious about the fighting in Mosul. Did Colonel Durant hear them talk or have conversations about it? Is it those units moving and then us whacking stuff with drones and aviation, or are they hooking and jabbing on their own? So, sir, any idea, conversation about the?
Yeah, it's a combination. You know, we've got Americans up there advising, you know, down to not small unit level, probably battalion level, and we're dropping bombs and we're doing the drones with them too. Just, you know, not having the Americans doing the, you know, the house to house fighting, but we've got American advisors in there, you know, right with the Iraqis.
Interesting. The because we don't see well, you're home now. We don't see a whole lot of coverage about it. About our role in it. We don't see a whole lot of coverage about our role in that conflict, and we are there in increasingly larger and larger numbers.
We are, but it's still the Iraqis carrying the brunt of the fight, and that's what they're trying to push, is the Iraqis are carrying the fight. They're the ones who are taking all the casualties, not us. So it wouldn't be fair for us to step in and beat us, you know, beat ourselves in the chest and say, look, what a great job we're doing. We're there supporting. The guys on the ground are Iraqi military. You know, the Iraqis are doing the fight, so that's who you need to recognize.
Right. Interesting stuff. My guest this morning, Jerry Durant. Hey, sir, do you mind if we take a quick break and we'll come back in a couple minutes? I've got some email for
you. Sounds good.
I'll stand by. All right. We're talking Iraq. Colonel Durant just back from the front. And we're talking about it. Interesting discussion. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
Veteran Sergeant Arlie Ermey here with important information for veterans. At 2,600 American job centers nationwide, veteran and transitioning military personnel can find help with career counseling, resumes, and job placement. You want more information, don't you? The Department of Labor offers a variety of programs to help our military heroes find good jobs or continue their education. What are you waiting for?
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
...836 here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network, joined by Jerry Durant, retired colonel, United States Marine Corps. And we're kind of going through some emails. We're talking about his recent tour to Iraq. Mac, I'm always curious when guys go back, and Colonel Durant has been back and forth, I know, a lot. What is the biggest change that he's seen in the last 12 months relative to Iraq?
Well, that's a good question. Well, the last 12 months is just the willingness of the Iraqi military to talk to Americans again. Yeah, before, you know, a year ago it was a hands-off, stay away from us. He'll give us stuff. Build stuff for us, but we don't want to talk to you. We don't want to be seen talking to you. And now, you know, they actually want us to do stuff for them. That's been very refreshing.
The So the Iraqi military kind of coming of age, if you will, in terms of, you know, we're done doing the posturing, and now maybe we'll open the door for some kind of professional engagement.
Yeah, they understand the need for that now. And that, you know, that's been difficult to overcome. But they understand that it's going to help them, you know, if they start working with us.
Interesting. The my guest here is Colonel Jerry Durant. So when you look at the fight Mosul Raqqa, do they is from what you hear and when you're there, are they focused on going into Syria and Raqqa? How did they do? Did you have any conversations? How the hell is that going to work?
Well, I don't think the Iraqi military are going to be doing it. It'll be U.S. going to be dropping bombs and some other people. But that really didn't come up. I didn't really know about that until just recently.
Right.
I doubt seriously if the Iraqis will do that. They've got no need to go over there.
Talk to us about, as you got around the country, is there a different vibe in every part of the country now? And if so, what is it? We obviously stayed out in Al Anbar, and that's all, you know, we all saw, but you tend to cut a much wider path than the rest of us. Is there a different vibe relative to what they're looking for in different parts of the country?
Well, you know, they want stabilization, but the problem is, you start talking to these people. I had tea or chai with a tribal sheikh down south about 2 weeks ago, and I talked to him about, you know, bringing the country together and, you know, a form of a central government that, you know, everybody work together. And he was, oh, yeah, it was great, great, great. And then I started talking about reality, about all the violence that the Shias have done, you know, against the Sunnis and the Sunnis against the Shias. And he finally shook his head and he said, I don't see how the government in our country can ever come together as a unified country. And more now I'm talking to Iraqis and they're actually asking me the question, do you think our country will ever be unified? And I don't see how it could be a unified country with the violence that goes on in that country. You know, one sect against the other one.
Do you offer an opinion? Do you offer an opinion?
Yeah, I did. I said, I think the country needs to be split three ways. And the people I've talked to all pretty much agree, you know, this country needs to be split up. You know, Iraq wasn't a country until the early 1920s. You know, the Brits came in after World War One and split up the Ottoman Empire. You drew a line on a map, and this is Iraq. You know, you had Kurds, Shias, and Sunnis on it. And, you know, violence has been going on for a long, long time, and it's been worse since the invasion in 2003. And we opened up the floodgates when we came in. And one thing this tribal sheikh was talking about, he said it was criminal when it was U.S. Army down there. He said it was criminal when the U.S. Army came in because, you know, we were all in favor of the invasion because they were 100% Shia down there. But no one came in. You know, the law and order completely disappeared, and the American forces were there. Didn't stop any of the Alibabas or the thieves from stealing stuff. And that really pissed off the locals because, you know, they couldn't do it on their own. The Americans wouldn't stop all the thievery.
You know, it's in retrospect, it's like, what in God's name were we thinking about relative to going in there, right? We disband the police, you know, we let everybody keep an AK because we're that way,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
And then when they come to us with these disputes, you know, and the criminal gangs went, you know, they had a field day in all of that because there was nobody there to stop it. And so,
yeah,
in retrospect, it's like, why did we rip up the war plan? And I think history is going to judge Donald Rumsfeld very harshly.
Hopefully. Well, you know, I had the regiment and we were planning, and, you know, and the plan that we had was to use the police because I, you know, was at a second division. He met the first division, you know, doing the war plans, you know, and we did a couple war games out here. And, you know, the final outcome was, and we keep the military and we keep the police, and we help them, you know, they help us rebuild the country and you know, maintain control. And then, you know, the State Department came in and disbanded the military and the police and put the world's fourth largest army out of work overnight. You know, that was criminal. It really was. And you were there when all that stuff was going on, you know, but what a mess that was.
And Bremer couldn't get out of there quick enough. He could not get out
of there.
Well,
you know, they announced that, you were there. You remember they announced that Iraq was a sovereign nation, right. And the very next morning, he and his staff left.
Right. They left a date, a day prior to, like, it was going to be official. I can't remember on what day. It was in the summer sometime. Bremer was out of there.
July.
Yeah, the Bremer was out of there the day before. And you're just like, wow. Could not get out of there quick enough. But again, I mean, how did we think it was going to work? And it was all going to come back on our own credibility as the nation that invaded, as Americans. This was all going to come back to us. And it's almost like you look back and it's like, God, how could we be that stupid?
Yeah.
How could we be that stupid? Especially, you know, with our experiences. Well, I guess, you know, there's so many people with the experience of Vietnam had left the Pentagon that there was nobody to stand up and say, yeah, you can't do it like that, man. You're going to have to do all these different things. So,
well, we didn't do Vietnam very well either.
Well, but I know, but we tended to write.
The lessons learned weren't learned.
Yeah, we tended to write a lot about it, and we certainly argued enough about it. And so, anyway, just interesting. My guest, Jerry Durant, another email for you. Mac, I've long thought that the only way that Iraq survives as some kind of federalized republic partitioned into three, yet nobody seems to be in favor of it except for the people that are there that are living the nightmare. Is there any sentiment around the country for it, or is it simply the people that want this because they see that as a way to a more long-term and a lasting peace?
Well, I said the people I've talked to would like to see the place divided up because what's going on right now is not working.
Right.
But the official stance is, you know, this is Iraq, and we're going to bring the nation together. But again, I was there in the summer of 2006, and there was a big advertisement in town about, you know, mothers bring your children to a certain market square in Baghdad. We're going to hand out free rice and cooking oil and then ice cream for the kids. And I happened to be up at in the IZ at the hospital that night visiting some wounded Marines, and they got hundreds of women and children in this big square, and it was two big semi-trailer trucks sitting there. Mm-hmm. They got them in there, and then one of them exploded and killed hundreds of people and wounded, of course, hundreds too. And that was Sunnis killing Shias because it was a Shia neighborhood. And that was just one night. You know, that kind of stuff goes on, or was going on, you know, wholesale for a long time.
You know, I mean,
a lot of killing going on.
You hear that stuff, and it's almost... It's almost not believable. It's almost it sounds like fiction, like you're making that up. But that happens.
Well, I was at the hospital when I started bringing kids in.
That happens over and over and over and over.
Yeah. Well, and then you know, I just got an email from it was in the news, I guess, yesterday. They had it was either rockets or mortars hit the IZ yesterday. I've got a retired sergeant major working for me. He just sent me a note saying they went over top of our compound and landed about a quarter mile away. That's the first time the IZ's been hit for a while.
IZ?
International Zone, the Green Zone.
Okay.
The seat of the government is. Most of the embassies are in there, including the U.S. embassy.
All right. Is the security situation in and around Baghdad? You were obviously in and out of Baghdad. Is the security, is it better, worse, or more of the same?
I think it's not bad. You know, the international zone's pretty good. The problem with the international zone, though, was Sadr, you know, the big Shia cleric, came out 2 days ago and said they're going to go into the IZ and start killing anyone that's not Iraqi. That happened last summer, and they actually marched a couple thousand people in to parliament and beat a bunch of people up and then left. Came again the next day, did the same thing, and they're threatening to do it again. because the Iraqi military didn't stop them last time. You've got Iraqi military, you know, guarding the international zone. And if Sadr comes in, I don't know what's going to happen to the international zone.
What is, give us the latest
update. That's a mess.
Give us the latest update on him. He's, you know, what, starting about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, he started to make noise.
It started last summer.
Right.
He's the lead Shia cleric in Iraq, and he's Iranian backed. Because, you know, the popular, or the Shia militia, or the PMUs, are Iranian led.
Right.
And he's got a big Iranian background. So, you know, the stuff he's pushing is Iranian supported as well. He's going to be a problem.
How?
Well, I think, again, like, you know, last summer, they said they were going to come into DIZ and you're not going to stop me. And that's exactly what he did. He marched a couple thousand Shias into the IZ, you know, through all the checkpoints, and the Iraqi military didn't stop it. They went into parliament, you know, and destroyed a bunch of stuff, beat up some of the parliamentarians, and then left. And then they came back the very next day and did the same thing. And the Iraqi military didn't stop them. So if he decides he wants to invade the IZ, you know, tomorrow or next week or next month, he's going to do it. And who's going to stop him? And the only way to stop it would be open with machine guns, you know, start mowing people down. And I don't think the Iraqi military will do that.
Email says this. Mac, listening to Colonel Durant, it seems to me that the Iraqi army is now a Shia organization. Yes or no?
Yes. Yeah, there's a Sunni in charge of the ministry of the military, but I don't know what the percentage is anymore. It used to be a pretty high percentage of Sunnis in there. In the last 2 years, and the last two prime ministers have been pushing Sunni leadership out. And the same down at the small unit level, there aren't that many Sunnis left in the military.
Interesting.
They've been making, you know, yeah, it's probably 90% Shia now, if not higher.
So as we look over the horizon, Mosul will get taken care of. The border integrity will be, you know, somewhat restored in the future, and then they'll look out west. Is there any part of ISIS that's still in the western part of Iraq?
Yeah, there are. They've got them out of Ramadi and Fallujah, but they're still out Aruba and some of the other places west of Ramadi.
Right.
They haven't cleaned them out totally.
So then at some point in the next year, they will get after that.
They're going to have to do that.
Wow.
Well, you know, when we were there out on the Syrian border, you know, I got sent out to one time by, I think it was Petraeus, about, you know, we need to close the borders and, you know, the Iraqis aren't doing a proper job. That Marine battalion out there is not doing their job. And I laughed at him. I said, sir, you know, you go down to Mexico and we can't even control our own borders. And you want one Marine battalion to close off the Iraqi-Syrian border? So get serious.
Yeah. And well, I always thought it was interesting because why did guys join the Border Patrol and Customs? Because the money was good.
Yeah.
Because the bribes are good. If you can get on with the Border Patrol, you go out there and you work. I mean, that those smuggling routes have been around along for how many thousand years?
Thousands of years.
Right.
Yeah.
And all they do is change the commodity that they're smuggling. It goes from satellite dishes to booze to pornography to all kinds of things. So it's just it's interesting. But our worldview is not their worldview. And so even our own worldview, like what do we think goes on at the port of entry in San Diego, in New Jersey, Long Beach? Do we don't think that there's people on the take there that are doing things that are wrong? And yet,
yeah, the American way is not always the right way either.
Interesting.
You know, do it my way because I'm an American. You know, that's the ugly American talking when you say that.
Interesting. My guest, Colonel Jerry Durant, for a few more minutes. Sir, a couple more emails, and then we'll let you get on about your way. Mac, I'm curious. Are there a lot of American contractors there? Is there a lot of work there? I'm looking for a job. I wouldn't mind going back to Iraq with the right company. Colonel Durant, have a sense of work that can be had there, and is it safe? So, sir?
I think, you know, personally, I think it's safe, but no, there aren't a lot of companies that are right now, because it's very difficult to work in Iraq, you know, if you don't have a trustworthy local working with you. You know, construction project that would cost $100,000 here, it cost you $300,000 over there, because you got to pay everybody in order to move material and get workers and that kind of stuff. We haven't had that problem. We've got a really good local we're working for. Yeah, but the bottom line, there's not a lot of American companies out there right now.
All right.
Yeah, there are some, but not very many. And there were just a couple more just left yesterday.
All right. I'll ask you this, and then we'll let you go. Mac, bottom line, in my mind is a stoplight chart that we used to use for Iraq and different parts of our sectors, be they kinetic or be they governance or infrastructure or whatnot. Overall, where would Colonel Durant place the color ball, green, yellow, amber, red, or pink or red? I'm giving him more selections than we generally use. So I'm curious, overall, where does he peg Iraq right now, and is the trend upwards in terms of the future, sideways or down? So, sir?
You know, I think if you do the color chart, I think probably yellow, because it's not as bad as it was, you know, a couple years ago or a couple months ago, and it's still not where it should be. And I think the trend is upward, but again, we'll see what happens after Mosul. Because everybody's predicting a big fight between, you know, the Kurds, the Turks are up, the Turks are a couple thousand troops up in northern Iraq. Because they don't want the Kurds to take anything, after Mosul. And then you've got the Shias and you've got the Sunnis that all live up there. So everybody's fighting together right now to get ISIS out. And then the big question is going to be what happens after Mosul is taken. And that's going to, you know, that's going to kind of chart the way for Iraq, I think.
Do one more question for me. Very, very interesting is the dance that the Russians are doing with the Turks, and what the Turks are doing. What's Iraq's response if the Kurds are if the Kurds and the Turks get into it? Any idea?
Oh, God. Yeah, I think they'd probably back the Turks because they don't want. No one likes the Kurds. You know, they're divided up into about four or five different countries, and no one likes them. I think the Turks would back, or the Iraqis would probably back the Turks, and they don't want the Turks in their country. But they're in Kurdistan right now, and they haven't left. You know, they've been asked to leave by the Iraqi government, and they haven't left.
All right. Well, sir, first of all, welcome home. Where's the next place you're headed to hunt?
Czech Republic.
No kidding?
Well, yeah, you know, we're looking at some new weapons. We're looking at a new pistol, a new caliber pistol. We'll probably head to the Czech Republic and, you know, test the pistols and shoot something with them.
Well, you have to do that, right? You have to test the pistol.
Oh, of course.
The, all right. Well, first of all, well, I want to thank you for joining us this morning, and we don't get a chance to talk to that many guys with your kind of experience and continuing to do it. So thanks for the visit. And
thanks for having me on.
No, you and I need to cross paths and have lunch or something before you get going again. So I will give you a call.
Sounds good. Hey, well, the gunner called me a couple weeks ago, too, so it was good talking to him.
Mike?
Of course.
Mike's gonna be on here in a few minutes. No, you guys did a lot of stuff in Iraq in 2004, and he was part of it, and
he's
going
to get me killed more than once.
You know, it's interesting, because that's what he says about you.
Oh, yeah?
Everybody says that about you, that, yeah, if you wanted to get shot at, all you had to do was hang out with Colonel Durant.
Well, you know, it was funny because, you know, the people in the division staff, if they wanted to get a combat action group, they'd come over and ask if they could ride with us. We got shot at almost every time we went out that gate. We were on the road 6 days a week.
Well, no.
It was an interesting time.
Well, no, they tell story after story about you. Like, yeah, that guy was incredible. Anyway, well,
no, we had a good time.
It's good to see you're safe, and welcome home, and I'll give you a call, and we'll have lunch. I appreciate you doing this.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Stay out here.
All right, there you have it. Colonel Jerry Durant. Wait till you hear. Yeah, we'll get Mike talking about him here in a few minutes. But, no, a great guy, always great to have him on to hear about Iraq. And I will tell you this. It's confounding at times what people think can happen in Iraq with relative to the future. Because I think it was apparent to us, you know, I don't know, 2004, 2006, whatever, that these people hate each other. You know? They hate each other. They'll never coexist. So it's like under what circumstances does somebody believe that you know that they will coexist, and it's you know it's craziness. So and maybe it continues as a single nation with you know under some kind of federal republic, something like that. So it's interesting that now more and more Iraqis are asking Colonel Durant that question. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Gunner's going to join us as we continue on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives by donating today. The USO.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our way of living, our quality of life? The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the GlobalSoft website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.